Do you ever have the feeling that someone is messing with your mind? You know, playing games with you or deliberately confusing you? Well, there's a name for that, but we can't say it on the air. Philosopher Colin McGinn wrote an entire book about it, but we can't say the title on the air either. I can tell you it rhymes with mind trucking and that the subtitle is A Critique of Mental Manipulation. So, Colin, how do we talk about this? Is there a radio-friendly euphemism you like to use?
I used to call it MF.
Okay, MF, that
MF,
works.
Yeah, okay. MFing, MF.
Okay, we'll try that. What exactly is an MF?
MF is a type of action that somebody performs on another person where they try to interfere with that person's mind, make them do things against their own best interests or against their own best reason in such a way as to cause emotional upheaval.
There are a bunch of different variations on this, though. I mean, that makes it sound very negative, but you begin the book by describing at least a few ways in which MFing can be sort of pleasurable, like classic movies like The Matrix or Fight Club have a kind of mind-blowing twist ending.
Exactly, yes. So there's the positive and negative species of the MF. I think that the negative kinds are the more dominant ones and they're more interesting ones. But at the same time, there do seem to be cases where people speak of being MF'd by a film that they liked very much. It means one in which their expectations were led in a certain direction and they firmly believed that certain things were going on in the film. And then suddenly, like in The Usual Suspects, something happens that upsets all those expectations. And they find it thrilling. There's a kind of frisson of surprise. And sometimes it can be quite extreme where a person suddenly reverses everything that they've thought before. So there are the positive kinds of MF. I talk about them in the course of the book. Even philosophy I describe as a little bit of MF going on in that, because it can lead to these, in this case, pleasurable or intellectually stimulating upheavals of thought. And most people enjoy that. It's possible, of course, to find those things distressing. At the same time, many people find skepticism distressing, but many don't.
So is this why you got interested in the subject from a philosophical standpoint?
Yes, very much from a philosophical standpoint. In fact, a specific reason was I gave a lecture in New York many years ago now about the mind-body problem, and I was proposing a certain kind of view which was found by many people to be rather revolutionary and surprising. And somebody afterwards said to me, that was a real MF, and I'd never actually heard the phrase before, and I instantly knew what it meant.
It's a dubious compliment.
I knew what was in the lecture. I could see what they had in mind, and I thought, what a strange phrase, and it lingered around, knocked around in my mind for a while, and then for some reason one day I thought, well, it would be good to think about this phrase and try to spell out what's behind it, so that's how I got interested in it.
It is a strange and kind of interesting phrase, but I'm curious why you find it philosophically interesting.
Well, it's philosophically interesting in somewhat the same way that BS is interesting. You're trying to say what's involved in, say, Harry Frankfurt was interested in what's involved in the difference between lying and BSing. Lying is a case where a person intentionally gets another person to believe a falsehood by making that person think that you, the speaker, believes the thing that you're lying about. So BS, if you had just looked at it without much analysis, you would think it was much the same thing, but actually it's different. And so Frankfurt pointed out that really the BSer is somebody who is indifferent to the truth, just uses the truth or uses the false either way in order to get whatever he wants to do, which usually is to create a good impression. So the idea of the MF is similar in that respect. It involves the idea of falsity. So I use the example of Shakespeare's Othello, where Iago is convincing Othello of many false things about his wife, Desdemona. So you might think, oh, is MFing then just a type of lying? But no, it's a little bit more interesting than that, because it involves particularly the idea of disturbing somebody's emotions and maybe even driving them into a kind of breakdown, which happens with Othello.
Yeah, when I think of the word MF, the term, I tend to think it means somebody's playing mind games with you. You know, that expression, somebody's messing with your head in a way that is deliberately manipulative or deliberately deceptive. There's something a little sinister about it.
Exactly. These are rough synonyms, aren't they, of the MF? Playing with one's head, messing with somebody's mind, and so on. The MF, though, is a much more emphatic phrase, a sort of pungent phrase that captures, I think, some of the sort of the immorality of the negative MF. You know, playing with somebody's head, it sounds like a kind of a nice thing to do. But if you're thinking of very despicable propaganda about something, you know, trying to stereotype a race or something of that sort, like Nazi propaganda, Then, of course, to say that you're playing with people's heads seems very much an understatement.
So there's something aggressive about it.
Aggressive about it, exactly. It's aggressive, it's directed to the mind. It's like raping the mind, almost. It's manipulation, but even that is a relatively weak word. Hmm. Assaulting the mind in some way. That's really, I think, what the word MF tries to bring out, the strong character of this kind of manipulation.
What's the first historical case you can think of involving MFing?
Well, as I say in my book, you can take it back to the Plato and the Sophists, where really the idea of sophistry is very like the idea of the MF. And in the case of Plato and the Sophists were people who rented out their skills in convincing people of various things. If you were on trial for something or something of that sort, you would hire one of these Sophists and they would come in to defend you. And they could use any means whatever. So they would manipulate the jury. They would appeal to prejudices. They would use fallacies. They would use any trick in the book in order to win the case. It's not much the same now with law. The idea of going by the truth and not manipulating the jury. You know, no lawyer does that. They do whatever they can. So Plato found that rather deplorable. And he wanted to advocate strict reason. In other words, you only persuade people of things by appealing to logic, evidence, and so forth. So he was opposed to the Sophists, and I think ever since Plato there's been that division within Western civilization between the Platonists, the believers in reason, and the Sophists, who are more like politicians or lawyers, who use any emotional means, push any buttons, play with any minds, whatever phrase we use, in order to achieve a certain end. In other words, they don't really care about the truth, and success for them is a matter of just of winning.
No, it's the concept of spin.
It's like the concept of spin is very similar. I think that's a good analogy. We use a strange word to try to capture it. Spin is what the ball does when it goes through the air. So we have this idea of political spin, where you're trying to create an impression. The idea is not to present objectively the evidence to the audience. The idea is to sort of try to trick them in some way, manipulate them, that kind of idea.
In Othello, one of the things that's so sinister and mind-boggling about what Iago does to Othello is he could have just killed him, you know, if he didn't like him. He could have just, they were out on battlefields together. He could have arranged an accident any old time. But instead, you know, he kind of destroys him from within by making him question everything about his life and his wife.
That's right. Yeah, it's one of the puzzles of interpretation of that play. Well, the question, why does he hate Othello to begin with? And nobody can really answer that question. It's not really very clear in the play about why he hates Othello. But if he does hate him, yes, he could kill him. But that's not what Iago is interested in. I think the reason Iago is not interested in it, Iago has a kind of pride in his own intellectual powers. And to assert his intellectual power over Othello is more important to him than just to stab him in the back. That's not his style. He enjoys a sense of having this control over Othello's mind. And that means that he's a superior person to Othello mentally. And I think that is the main reason for it. I think a lot of people who are systematic liars have the same motivation. They realize that it takes them a certain amount of skill to do it, and they just enjoy outwitting other people and deceiving other people. And sometimes I think they do it for its own sake. They may not even particularly value the aim of the lie, but the very act and process of it, they get a kick out of that.
Hmm. At the milder end of the spectrum, there are professions now in which people get paid large amounts of money to create more and more MFs. I'm thinking of advertising, of course. Do you think that there is more MFing now than there has been in the past?
I think there is more. And the reason really has to do with the growth of media. There's just more means for manipulating people. I think television has been one of the great MF inventions of all time. Advertising, of course, is, as you say, another case of it. Although advertising sometimes gets a bad rap. There's nothing wrong with telling people what products you have and sell it to them. It's just the means you use to do that. So, yeah, I think there's quite a bit more. I think the internet has really intensified it, because people now reading many hours a day and looking at their screens, they're much more easily manipulated because there's no quality control in the kind of rhetoric that they're being fed. I think that, there's a lot of it going on. But on the other hand, the point I make in my book, because there's a multiplicity of voices, one voice can try to question another. So somebody comes up with something and say on the internet, some conspiracy theory, let's say, and another person come along and try to puncture that. Whereas I think in the old days, when there was more of a monopoly on the means of persuasion, of course, all totalitarian states want the monopoly of the media, then you don't have the opportunity for competition between different sources of information. So on the one hand, there's more because there's more media. On the other hand, it dilutes the effect because there's this competition.
Colin McGinn is a philosopher and the author of a book with a title we cannot say on the air, but which rhymes with mind trucking. If you have questions or comments about anything you heard, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or you can post a message on our website at ttbook.org. It's always nice to know what you think.